Hey everyone, James Tapelake Graylian here. Jay and I made this episode about a week and a half ago, and we thought it was a really good episode. And then when I listened back, there's a lot of popping and clicking on it. I thought it was too much and that we shouldn't post the episode, but when we put a sample online, people said it wasn't too bad, so we decided to put it out anyways. We hope that you can listen to it. If you can't, well, I understand and I'm sorry about that. We'll have a new episode out pretty soon. But thanks a lot for listening to the Avs Hockey Podcast. We appreciate it. Here's the show.
Yeah, I got PA tonight. I got PAP. PA.
PA.
Go Avalanche!
Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche, and I'm your host, Jay Veen. In this show, my man, James Tapelake-Graylian, and I will sift through the Avalanche's surprising 6-1 start. We'll discuss Patrick Waugh's presence and what it's done for the team and the organization. We'll also break down Cody McLeod's hit on Nicholas Cronwall. Those topics and a whole bunch more Avalanche and hockey stuff coming at you in episode number 83 of the Avs Hockey Podcast. Stick around. James and I will be right back. Hello, Avalanche fans, and welcome back to the Avs Hockey Podcast. This is your home for almost everything Avalanche. I'm your host, Jay Veen. James Tapelake-Graylian in the house as always.
Yep.
I like when you grunt just to start the show.
Last season when we'd start the show and I'd grunt, I'd be like,
You had a reason
this
to grunt.
I'm like,
It's a happier grunt.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, so episode 83, you know, 83s. How about 8 plus 3, 11, McGinnigan? Are you good with that?
Okay.
Okay.
Sure.
Right on.
The Patrick Waugh edition, because that's what people are talking about, or Patrick Waugh.
I wish we had things to talk about.
You know, it's like I don't even know why we did an episode right now, because it's not like there's anything going on with the Avalanche.
I sent James a text at the end of the first game. I was like, we could do a show right now.
You want to talk about like Scarbosa? I don't know.
Hishin?
Yeah, probably.
Lake Erie Monster Podcast.
Did you see the inflatable Lake Erie eye that they put in the water?
That was pretty cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, I'll give them a little credit on that one. But hey, welcome back, everyone.
Hey.
It's good to see you.
Good to be there.
Talk to you.
This is an audio podcast. I don't know. We're not going to screw around forever on this thing. We got a lot to talk about.
We have a ton. One thing we did want to mention is we just finished recording a segment with Jeff Ponder from the Bash Brothers podcast. That's at Bash Brothers NHL on Twitter. Appreciate him reaching out to us and asking us to be on the show. We got that done this morning. His show will be posted soon, and we'll retweet it on the Twitter machine, because that's what you do on Twitter, is you retweet the tweets. The tweets.
All of them.
So thanks, Jeff, for having us on. And those of you who haven't heard his show, it's about the whole league. But he definitely knows his stuff, and it was fun to record with him. So, Jeff, thank you again.
Yeah, we had a great time.
Absolutely. Great time. Got us in the podcasting mood.
And
we didn't even need that. We're already set.
I'm hoping that we didn't just, like, blow the whole wad early. Like, we got it all out of our system, and now we're just going to kind of go, what do you think? I don't think that's going to happen,
though. No, that's not how we roll.
Let's find out.
The Avs are 6-1.
6-1.
If you... Raise your hand if you thought the Avalanche were going to be 6-0. Put your hand down.
Sorry.
You didn't think so. Nobody did.
No one.
But yeah, as they're going. So we're just going to go right down the list.
Yeah.
We'll talk about things and stuff. Almost everything Avalanche.
The last show we did like right up before opening night. So really we don't have any previous stuff to delve into.
It's just finally hockey.
Yeah. We just, the season started and we went, bam, let's do it.
I like the fact that the games are, I didn't realize how compacted last year was. I mean, we'd do a show every 3 weeks and we'd have, you know, 12 games to talk about.
Right.
I mean, this is, I think, 3 weeks today that we've done, and there's, you know, seven games. It's a little more comfortable.
And it's still a little bit of compact because of the Olympics.
Yeah.
You know, normally you'd have what, the 4 or 5 days of All-Star break. Maybe 1 week All-Star break. Now it's
three weeks. Yeah, I think it's 3 full weeks. Yeah,
that's a lot of games in a shorter amount of time. But then again, considering when the cup was won last season, you okay?
I'm good.
Thanks. Got a button over there. You have a mute button, don't you?
I will use the mute button.
Don't start playing.
Okay,
we got to get to the show.
All right, let's do it.
Hey.
October 2nd, 2013, the Avalanche play against the Anaheim Ducks, and they win 6-1.
I was there for that game.
A little energy in the building.
Oh, man. It was funny walking around the concourse during the warm-ups, and there's a big cheer, and Alex Tanguay is on the screen, and everybody's cheering him, and he's kind of just standing there, and he kind of looks up, he goes, oh, and just kind of starts skating around a little embarrassed.
Speaking of the screen, what do you think about the scoreboard?
It's ginormous. It was great.
It's awesome.
It was great. Now, I will also say that they did a little better of putting better content on, because one of our general complaints has been that the in-game experience is consistently consistent. It hasn't
consistently
changed for
abs.
Years.
Yeah.
Yeah. And I think they did a little bit of a better job putting stuff on there. When you've got that much real estate, you better use it. And they've got serious real estate up there.
Maybe the video board gave them the reason to remix things, which is good. Because I've said it before, you can't tell whether it's a game from 2003 or a game from 2011, 2012.
Yeah.
So it definitely is great for those of you that haven't seen it. I wouldn't necessarily say it's worth the trip, but I think it makes the in building experience way more exciting.
And there was a lot more highlights. I noticed that they would actually go back and do more replays. Again, if you've got it, use it. Before you never knew if you would actually see what just happened again or not. And this time they seem to be using it a little bit more.
They have some different camera angles, and they really, honestly, they might be doing, I guess, less with more, if that makes sense. Because I noticed they're not doing a lot of the hokey graphics and things like that as much.
Right.
The thing speaks for itself.
Yeah, and we'll see what happens as they use it more. You know, as time goes on, maybe they'll kind of get a little bored and try more hokier stuff or whatnot.
But. They're bored.
also, debut of the Ice Girls. Well, I guess season debut. I don't know if they were in for the preseason.
I would know. I didn't go.
But not really. It was like, okay, whatever. You know, there was no, obviously there wasn't the dancing of the guys in the
that was always
jumpsuits.
Fun.
That was always fun.
Yeah.
But the funny part about the Ice Girls is that you can tell which ones are figure skaters and which ones are hockey players
skates.
Because of the, well, not just the skates themselves, but the way that they skate, push off when they take their stride,
the toe pick.
Yeah. They're pushing straight back, or if they're pushing out, they play hockey.
Boom.
And that, I would say it was about a 50-50 split.
Things we notice.
Is that weird that they bring in the, scantily clad Ice Girls, and I'm looking at the way that they're skating. Is that weird? I don't know what that says about.
Not if you don't think so.
Okay. I think it's great.
You know what? You just be you.
I'm going to be me. So anyways, I was at the game and it was fun.
Interesting game. Ton of goals. Mm-hmm. Patrick Waugh got a little attention at the end of the game.
Oh, man.
What did you think of the matchup?
Between what?
I don't know.
Patrick
there was all
Waugh
kinds of
and the glass
the stanchion.
Or?
No, it started with a line matchup. It started with where did that faceoff come from?
Let's go back a little bit in the game. So Nathan MacKinnon is making his opening night debut, the regular season debut, and Nathan MacKinnon is going to have to face a lot of "Hey, welcome to the NHL" moments. If you're the first overall pick, it's going to happen. And, you know, at a certain point, you just got to go, okay, enough already. You don't need 29 teams checking you hard and going, welcome to the NHL, buddy. Oh, by the way, supposedly,
Lovejoy.
Ryan Getzlaf, in one of the faceoffs in his first faceoff said, "Hey, welcome to the NHL." And MacKinnon said, "Thanks." And then
when did that happen?
In that game.
I missed this.
His first faceoff with Getzlaf.
Did he? How do you know he said that?
Because they talked about it in something that was online.
On the internet?
I'm serious.
Yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah. So
right on.
It was like serious.
Good for him.
And so, yeah, rather than, I remember Sidney Crosby kind of had one of those in his first season where somebody said something to him and he's like, oh, hey, and the ref drops the puck while he's still chatting.
It's like, rookie.
Yeah. And then he's like, I will never do that again.
Don't talk to me. I'm facing off.
So, but anyways, that was his Getzlaf welcome to the NHL. And then Ben Lovejoy decides to give his little welcome to the NHL by roughing him. So
that wasn't he stuck a knee out. That wasn't very
well.
Nice.
This was earlier.
Okay, earlier too. That's right.
MacKinnon took his first penalty, which was a roughing. So they were matching roughings.
Oh, that's right.
They
were battling in front of the net.
Right. Yes. So there's a little bit of in-game history in that game. But you know, the moment's passed. It's kind of like, you know, if you have You have that guy that you want to fight because of the code, blah, blah, blah. And then you fight him and you don't get the satisfaction you want. You don't go after him again. You've already done it. Well, McKinnon gets roughed up. Then he gets two assists. And then there's Lovejoy going after him again with about 45 seconds left. And this is one of the things that I kind of want to find out what you think about this, Jay, because when you're in a blowout game, what is the appropriate line to put on the ice? It's 6-0 at this point. Do you put on your top line? Do you put on your fourth line checkers? Do you put on your third line? You know, there's this whole idea that, okay, now you have to do this exactly appropriate thing. And I'm not exactly sure what you're supposed to do. You protect your guys, you put out your goons. What do you do in that situation exactly? Any thoughts on that?
What Boudreaux didn't do? I don't know. Yeah. It was just Patrick Waugh's line throughout the entire press conference and everything is like, I was just matching lines.
Yeah.
With the last, whatever, 5 seconds or whatever, 6-1 at the time.
About 40-something seconds, and Ben Lovejoy with a knee on knee or knee close almost to, on knee or right. something hit on McKinnon. And you know, here's your first overall pick and you're going to throw a knee at this guy.
Right.
Hey, great way to build the NHL. We always hear, you know, oh, here's the NHL and these guys aren't selling it. You know, this is bad for the image of the NHL, blah, blah, blah. This is bad. Trying to injure your number one overall pick of that year, that is bad for the NHL in general.
In someone's idea, yeah. I mean, it was really interesting because all Patrick Waugh said is I just matched lines because the face-off after that is when all the stuff started, and I was just matching lines.
Mm-hmm.
And he's right, but I think it's the one thing in the NHL where these guys are proud. They don't want to put out their number one line just to take a face-off with 5 seconds left. You don't see that very often.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know whether Boudreaux was trying to send a message just to say we're not going to back down. And by sending out your third, fourth line, whatever you want to do, that's one thing you can do.
Mm-hmm.
These guys are competitive. They're not going to give up, and I get that. But that's when all the shenanigans started.
Well, and, you know, considering the first line of the Anaheim Ducks has Corey Perry and Ryan Getzlaff,
right.
They're not unused to shenanigans.
Getzlaff especially. He'll drop them.
Oh, Perry's just, yeah.
So, well, Perry, everything kind of started. I think everybody's seen the video. If not, we have all kinds of stuff that we'll post with our show. But Perry kind of started the whole thing. He's sitting on the boards. You can see him. He's sitting on the boards, you know, leaning over to the side of the stanchion that was about to get punished. And he's yapping at, I think it was Patrick Waugh.
Mm.
And Boudreaux said earlier, you know, that Patrick Waugh had been talking to the opposition. He had been talking to the officials through the preseason. And you know, that wasn't cool. Boudreaux calls him Bush League, whatever. But Corey Perry eventually gets into Patrick Waugh's ear, and Waugh has enough. And Boudreaux was trying to stick up for his team. Corey Perry squirting water at Ryan O'Reilly. It was a pretty interesting situation.
Mm-hmm.
And then Patrick Waugh took the bait and sent a message. And, well, he was Patrick Waugh, too. So I think I don't know whether I meant to ask you, I've been meaning to ask you, is what you think with Patrick Waugh, is he really that competitive and that kind of, he just snaps? Or is this part of kind of a shtick? I think it's a little bit of both. But I think this is a way to, you know, to get his team fired up. I've got your back. I'm not backing down from anybody, and neither should you.
I think it is, because I don't think he's quite, I don't think he would calculate that, you know, if I do this, then that's going to be the outcome. I can't
he's never done that.
No. Yeah. But, I think it was pretty genuine and pretty, you know, pretty right on.
The fans loved it. Obviously. This is as excited as I've, you know, seen and heard and, you know, interacted with Avs fans for, I can't remember.
Yeah.
How long? So that was cool. He gets a game misconduct.
So he shoves the glass,
kills the stanchion.
It starts to go over a little bit. Then he hits it again and it goes to about a 45 degree angle. And then, the Ducks players shove it back. And there's this cameraman
right there.
And he's like, he's just thinking, I'm going to get killed.
I'm going
to
die.
Yeah. He's like the AV technician on the Death Star. You know, he's just along for the ride trying to get a good close up of, Darth Vader. And it's just not going to happen.
That's right. So it was, quite the night. Patrick Waugh, the best way, I've said it a couple different times on Facebook, I said too, he was fined $10,000 by the league for being Patrick Waugh.
Pretty much.
That's what he does.
It, yeah.
A lot of attention, yeah. More attention than usual with Patrick Waugh. But it's also, as I mentioned on the Bash Brothers podcast that we were just on, this is Patrick Waugh. This is the Patrick Waugh all of us Avalanche fans know and love. If you are not an Avalanche fan, you haven't seen this before, you'd watch that and go, what is going on here? For us, you just kind of get used to it, and that's who he is, and he's obviously not going to change.
Well, you know, you had Joe Sacco before, which was, you know, if you had a meme called Sacco Face, it could be the exact same picture over and over, and you could probably throw in some Tyler Arneson face in there, and nobody'd know the difference. Now there's somebody who's actually fiery, who actually is saying things, who actually is doing things. You know, he's crossed the line before in the juniors. He crossed the line with this, and he paid the price, and whatever, that's fine.
Mike Chambers asked him and said, would you do this every game? And Patrick Waugh said, if I have to, I would.
Yeah.
$820,000 later. He would too. Mm-hmm. He just would.
Yeah.
And that's why we love Patrick Waugh.
You know, Patrick Waugh is, he took the contract, the coaching job, and he didn't take a guaranteed contract. If he gets fired, he won't get paid. Unlike every other coaching gig, you get fired,
ever.
You're still paid until your contract is over. I think that's fine. I think that's fair. You know, but he will never have to pay for a meal in this town. He will never have to pay for a drink in this town. He's not going to be ever hurting. When he gets fired someday down the line, because that's what coaches do, they get fired. He will go back to Quebec and he will coach there and still be the GM and still partially own the team. What's he afraid of? What's he got to worry about?
It's a good place to be.
And people are talking, what was it, Boudreaux? You just don't do that. You just don't do that. No, Boudreaux, you don't do that. And that's fine. You know, if you want, you motivate your players in some ways. Look at what John Tortorella does. You know, he's such a jerk to his players, to the media.
He gets off on it.
But that's, you know, that's fine. That's acceptable enough. No, this is fine. If Patrick Waugh feels that, you know, what else is he supposed to do? He's got his player, his best player, his number one guy out there, gets a knee-on-knee hit. You know, his brand new first overall draftee guy tries to injure him. What is Patrick Waugh supposed to do? I'm just gonna put Bordalo out there and maybe slap a few people around. That'll show something.
Yeah, what do you think he's gonna do?
Yeah, he's gonna, you know, we're gonna, Avs are gonna see the Ducks again.
I'm kind of curious, like, as to the conversations that happened after the game. Mm-hmm. Was like, you know, maybe Kroenke or Sakic, like, Patrick, you want to calm it down a little bit? You know, it's just like, no, it's Patrick Waugh. What's the difference? It's him. Yeah. That's who he's going to be. We all know it. And pay the fine. We're good.
Greg Sherman just, like, probably walking in the hallway and just kind of moves over and gives him a little more room to walk by, a little scared of him.
Hi. Patrick.
Hey, Patrick. Oh, you remember me? I'm Greg.
Never mind.
Oh, I'll get you your coffee, sir.
I'll talk to you later. Matthew Barnaby on Twitter. By the way, I love Patrick Waugh. #fire. #passion. #alittlecuckoo.
Just a little cuckoo.
Love that stuff. Hashtag.
I would rather see a over-the-top Patrick Waugh any day of the week than the Sacco go-round that we had, than Tony Granato not knowing what to do. Even Joel Quenneville. Quenneville is a very good coach, but, you know, I felt like the fans never knew where they stood with him. There was so much line changes and goalie go rounds and all of that. But right now, it's, you know, it's working.
He's a stash. Mm. Patrick Waugh that night says that Varley's fantastic. I thought about when Joe Sacco said anything was fantastic. I believe Patrick Waugh just a little bit more than that. Let's see. This is from Tim Warnsby on CBC at Warnsby CBC. At 18 years, 31 days, Nathan MacKinnon was the youngest player to record multiple points in his NHL debut since Teeter Kennedy had 4 points January 8th, 1944.
I remember Teeter Kennedy.
Good old Teeter.
Teeter.
That guy could play.
No kidding.
That's a hockey name, isn't it?
Teeter.
Still miss seeing Milan Hayduk. It's still a little bit strange. Maybe it's just because he hasn't officially retired, but the opening night, it was strange not to have 23 out there. He's been out there for 14 or 15 straight opening nights.
Yeah.
Was kind of weird.
I actually didn't miss him. Maybe that sounds horrible, but
Crush my thought.
Sorry.
Fine.
No, I just didn't really, you know, once you're watching how these lines are working and how these lines are matched up, basically swapping Tange for Hayduke, I had no complaints.
I mean, hey, watching Tange so far.
Yeah.
He can play.
The thing with, you know, the thing with hockey is eventually you age out no matter what. Even Gordie Howe did.
I did when I was like 8.
You know, if you'd use the size, damn it.
That's what everybody says, but you got to catch people.
Well, that's true.
Stick and puck. I'll work on it someday. Got to skate first. What else? Varley's glove held a little bit higher this season. Maybe a change. Mm-hmm. I believe from what I've read on a Puck Daddy article about Varley, there's been a lot of attention lately, which is great. Patrick Waugh actually suggested that.
Yeah.
Say, hey, instead of holding it low, hold a little bit higher. It covers a little more of the net.
Well,
that was one thing I noticed right away with his stance.
The old adage that I heard was that it takes longer and more effort to get the glove up than it does to get the glove down when you are in the butterfly, when you're going down in the butterfly.
Okay.
So you drop down, you've already got your glove high rather than dropping down and trying to raise it up. And if you remember, he would try and keep it kind of lower. Jose Theodore was horrible with this too. He would keep it closer to his pad.
He got beat high a lot.
Yeah, and he would try and cut off that shot that's about 14, 15 inches off the ice.
Toughest shot to stop right.
Right, but it's so much faster to get your glove down in that situation when you're going down rather than get your glove up while you're going down into the butterfly. Just, you know, a thing.
Goaltending moment.
Now, here's what I'm worried about with Varlamov. And Dario, my teammate, can tune out for just a moment here because he's tired of hearing me talk about this. Varley.
Dario, earmuffs.
When I would watch Varley go down into the butterfly, he doesn't get up one leg at a time. He springs back up. But to do that, part of what he does is he bounces down and up. And that, remember, he's had a couple of groin injuries. So that's when I saw that. I was just thinking, man, that's got to be a lot more strain on the groin.
So you were thinking about Varley's groin.
Listen,
the game.
This is a technical thing.
That's awesome. Gross, James. Just gross.
Let's just talk about your groin for a moment here. Just a straining like rubber bands, like bungee cords in there. Like, it's a technical thing. I'm just
saying. It is. I hear you.
Why can't I just make a point and not have a
big win? Thing? Not crotch humor. Big win. A lot of excitement.
Uh-huh.
Way to go, Avs.
Way to go, Avs.
October 4th, 2013. Avalanche against the Predators. Avs win. The battle against Seth Jones. Take that, Seth Jones. Great picture of them, of MacKinnon and Jones standing next to each other during a faceoff or whatever.
Yeah.
You could tell they were talking. So going back to kind of your Ryan Getzlaff thing.
Well, you know, the thing with him, with those two guys, is they were part of this whole media blitz. And as soon as they got, you know, if they hadn't, they played against each other in the Memorial Cup.
A lot.
And all then they are in the media together at the, you know, at the draft together.
They're international competition.
Yeah. So it's not juniors. It's not like Nathan MacKinnon didn't pick Seth Jones. The Avalanche didn't pick Seth Jones. Yeah. So, you know, there's no real reason for them not to get along.
I think it's worked out pretty well for both teams.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, the Predators, they had a need. They had a defensive need since they lost Ryan Suter.
Right.
You
and
know.
Shea Weber sucks.
Shea Weber's awful.
He's terrible.
Webbering.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yep. So right. first two goals of the season. Oh, no. Wait. We need to go back to Avs Twitter Psychic for the first game.
Oh. Okay.
Someone got that correct on our last show.
Who was it?
Hmm.
Was it you?
Mm-hmm. We both called the initial. It seems like forever ago. But yeah, I think you said it was going to be Parenteau. I said it was going to be Ryan O'Reilly.
Oh.
And Ryan O'Reilly scores on the breakaway.
Mm-hmm.
Avs Twitter Psychic.
Oh, that's right.
Winning.
You're just saying I'm wrong.
That's the fun part.
Why are you shaming me like this?
Because I can.
Okay.
First two goals of the season in the second game of the season by P.A. Parenteau.
Pa.
And he get Pa Parenteau. We will include a link to Kyle Keefe's worst interviews ever.
Oh, my God.
Kyle Keefe, thank you. That was pretty much gold. I'm not sure if he could do it again and make it as funny, but kudos to the Avalanche players for playing along with him.
Yeah, great little interview. I don't think that we've seen as fun of a media thing since Johnny Hot Pocket.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Keefe seems to be driving that whole thing. Mm. Way to go, yep. Keefe. Pa Parenteau.
Pa Parent.
It's good stuff. So P.A. Parenteau gets Du Ballon.
Uh-huh.
I think that's how you say it in French. Du Ballon. Thank you, Chris Joy. Spongy Monkey. And who scores the other goal for the Avalanche? James's favorite nickname for an Avalanche player, Big Meat. Big Meat. James is looking really uncomfortable right now, and I love it. Any comments on that?
I can't remember who Big Meat is.
That's Patrick Bortolo.
Thank you.
I think it went off his skated. I don't think he tipped it in with a stick, but he knew it hit him. He's the only guy.
I don't even think he knows what his stick is supposed to do.
The one thing, too, is that he's the only guy in the league that actually does the minor league college thing, is he'll go by the bench, give everybody five, and he'll go down to Varley and give him 5-2. No other NHLer does that. It's a minor league thing, yeah, and it's a college thing. Yeah. But
it's, you know, it's the thing with that is he doesn't know because he almost never scores.
Yeah.
So
he's trying to act like he's been there before, but he can't because he hasn't been.
We had Big Sexy. Now we have Big Meat. I can't keep all these big guys separated with all these.
I love it. Nicknames. I just love how uncomfortable you get. Steve Howney. What the heck's going on here? Steve Downey hits Roman Josi during the second period. The Preds weren't happy with the hit. Steve Downey.
We were going to watch this again and talk about
it. Yeah, Steve Downey is after the McLeod hit. It doesn't really matter. The Preds were not very happy with Steve Downey. Some people saying it's your typical charge. He got a 2-minute minor. From my thought, I thought it was way late. The arm went up way after the hit. It was when he got jumped by Bork and by Shea Weber is when the arm went up. So right. I didn't think they were going to call the charge, but maybe the outside official saw a little bit more because the official down low was protecting his face from flying feet in his grill. But it was a topic of conversation for a little bit, but you know, no big deal. So,
well, the thing with, okay, first off, my feeling is I don't care when the arm goes up as long as it's the right call.
Okay.
If it's a little bit late, whatever, there's other circumstances involved. I'm just pulling up the video of it, and for some reason there's an ad that isn't really helping me with this.
We like ads.
We love ads. What could be the best thing ever? People are talking about how nebulous the charging rule is. Charging in general is the rule of thumb is two strides. If you take two solid strides, it's a charge. Okay. So
you missed it. You were looking at me.
No, I looked down and then I looked back up.
Okay. All right.
But regardless,
you didn't see the whole thing.
The problem with the ref though, that was right there, was that the ref was right there. Like the Predators
he was in the middle of the action.
Fell at his feet. Yeah. So the first thing a ref is going to do in that situation is going to be put up his arm, get out of balance. And basically when you put your arm up like that, you see these guys, they basically pop up on their skates, straight leg. They're not ready to move anywhere. The first thing that you're going to do when somebody falls at your feet like that is hands on the boards. Get ready to get out of the way.
Protect yourself first.
Just watching it coming down.
The thing was with the initial hit, and you're watching it right now. Yep. I don't think he obviously didn't play the puck, which is one thing.
Right.
But he wasn't striding through Josi either. So, and either way, I think it was fine. I was just kind of surprised that, especially after he got jumped, that Bork didn't get a penalty in this. And they eventually even things out. I think they gave Shea Weber a double minor.
So it was
kind of funky. In the fact, the Avalanche still got a power play,
right?
And they tried to even things out as much as they could. It was just kind of a confusing play. It was addressed right away by Shanahan as well, and said this is not a charge. This is not a suspendable charge.
Right. I thought it was a good 2-minute minor, and that's it. You know, but
it was a pretty good hit. It was a very Steve Downey hit.
It just when I look at these things, I think the common complaint that I hear about refs is, you know, they put their arm up late. It was the back ref, not the front ref, things like that. In general, it doesn't matter. What matters is, was the right call made? And in my opinion, in this one, it was a charge. It was a good call.
I know one of their goals is to even things out as often as possible. Mm-hmm. And that plays into it.
If there's something there, but, you know, Weber got a double minor. It was still an Avs power play when it could have gone completely the other way and been a Predators power play.
It was addressed right away by the player safety and whatever.
Yeah.
So it is what it is. The Preds did not appreciate the hit, but it was also Steve Downey.
I wouldn't have appreciated the hit either.
That's what Steve Downey does, though. And I'm not saying he should go around. It wasn't dirty. It was.
No, it was still a hockey play.
Tough. It was a penalty.
Yeah.
It was not dirty.
Yeah.
We'll get to Cody McLeod's hit here in a little bit. There.
Okay.
Nice segue.
Yeah.
All right. October 8th, Avalanche at the Maple Leafs, and the Avalanche win 2-1. Peter McNabb with some hockey porn early. You know, at the end of this game, you're going to be sore.
Mm.
Wow. Mm. Corey Sarich, so everybody missed this on Av Twitter Psychic on Twitter. Mm-hmm. Corey Sarich scores his first goal in 64 NHL games, mm-hmm. a total snipe, and P.A. Parento with another ballon.
This was a really, really good game.
Good hockey game.
The Avs did have some time where they just kind of skated around, not really knowing what to do on defense. But they were also playing against a team, a Leafs team that's on fire right now.
Yeah, they're playing very well.
Very well. So there were a couple of times where it was like about a minute and a half where the Leafs would have had complete control of the puck in the offensive zone. And the Avs are just kind of like trying to get it back, and it's not really working out that well. But this season, unlike last season or the season before, we've actually seen the Avs doing that a few times. So
yeah, and it's one of those where you can already tell the difference between how the team is made up and their mental their mental makeup is that you're just waiting for the opposition to score a goal, so it's tied, or so the Avs go down, so they have to battle back, and that hasn't happened so far, and that's also good to see. Varley with 27 saves for his third straight win, and the Avalanche with all their great, you know, teams and Hall of Famers and retired numbers. This is the first time they had started 3-0 in Avalanche franchise history, and that was kind of surprising. But we'll definitely take it.
Colton Orr with another with the MacKinnon welcome to the NHL. Also, you know, like I already talked about it. You know, how many times is it going to happen? It's going to get tiring. Just
MacKinnon can take a hit, and Orr actually fell over when MacKinnon didn't.
Yeah.
So that's good to see.
Yeah.
So Avalanche win that one. October 10th, 2013, the Avalanche against the Bruins in Boston. The Avalanche shut them out 2-0. Joe Haggerty on Twitter, Hacks with Hags, says Claude Julien, a quote from Claude Julien saying, "I spent the last couple of off days solidifying the glass between the benches." So I'm happy some people can laugh about that type of stuff.
Well, Claude Julien, of all people, he gets pretty fiery too.
Yeah. So that's, I always like seeing that side of the guys.
Every time I see Claude Julien, all I can think of is like him going, "Oh, come on." It's just, he says that, "Oh, come on." Let's do him.
All the time. Notable in this game, Cody McLeod plays in his 400th NHL game, obviously all with the Avalanche. I don't think there's anybody out there, including myself, including you, can I speak for you just for a second, that thought he was going to play 400 games in an Avalanche jersey.
No.
So really, you know, good for him.
Yeah.
As I started to do some research on who's played 400-plus games in an Avalanche jersey, there's only 10 players in Avalanche history that have done that. And a lot of names that we know and love, some more than others. The other nine in order: Milan Hajduk, Joe Sakic, Adam Foote, Peter Forsberg, John Michael Lyles, Stefan Yell, Paul Stastny, Alex Tange, and Adam Deadmarsh.
Mm.
So thank you, avalanchedb.com. For those of you that don't know about that site, excellent resource for stats for Avalanche history and also jersey numbers. But man, that's a serious list that Cody McLeod just joined.
Yeah, considering a lot of the guys, the tough guys that have been through the Avalanche, and some that were very well loved, Ian LaPerriere.
Yeah.
You know, that didn't make it that far, that didn't even come close, and the Avs would cut loose. A lot of those fourth liners are rotate them in, rotate them out.
And he hasn't been. He's been a staple, if there is such a thing.
Well, a couple of years ago, he improved his actual game rather than just the he actually stepped up, and I think it matters a lot. And that's what kind of kept him on more than, let's say, your Jim Cummins, your
there's so many guys,
Peter Worrell, you know, things like guys that, so, and even Bordalo is still, you know, he's kind of one dimensional, and that's maybe that'll change, maybe not, but they still threw a few years at him.
McLeod's more of that power forward, and I think
he's a fourth line power forward. I mean, he's not the power forward that you expect to be playing second line minutes, you know, ever. But he's there.
He can do a lot of things. He's obviously doing something right.
Yeah.
And it has been asked of Patrick Waugh, why is he wearing the alternate A? And I think, you know, beyond the hit, which we'll talk about, I mean, he's tough to play against, and people notice him when he's out there, and he's well respected for that. And if you're not paying attention when he's out there, he's going to make you pay the price. Power play goal by Ryan O'Reilly late in the first period, a beautiful tip, and also an empty net goal by Matthew Shane, which I will post the video for. He just turned on the Jets. He had been out there, I think, as long as the Bruins forwards, but man, he chipped it to himself from inside the Avalanche zone and just absolutely smoked Patrice Bergeron down the ice. There's actually an interesting GIF with him actually disappearing, and then they just show him reappearing back into the Bruins zone. He
was even on side for that one, wasn't he?
He was tried something different. But you know, it was quite the show by him, and he's been solid so far this year, man. Mm-hmm. It's fun to watch him grow up and play like we all obviously want him to. And good for Matt Duchene. Jiggy 39 saves, his 37th career shutout, and I believe from what I know, out of those 37 career shutouts, none had that many saves.
Mm.
So way to go, Jiggy.
Nice.
And other thoughts on the Bruins game?
I didn't really get much out of that one.
I got some, but we're all good. But way to go. Way to go. To go into any opposition building, especially the Bruins, who are no slouches,
mm-hmm.
and shut them out. That's always good. October 11th, deja vu. Matt Hunwick is waived again.
He's going to see it get sent down.
Yeah, he's going to play in Lake Erie.
Oh, until Ryan Wilson gets injured again.
Good point. I think he's making $1.6 million, so that's your $1.6 million minor leaguer.
Hey, you know, fine.
Greg Sherman. Way to go, bud.
Well, you know, at least they're making the hard decisions. I mean, the old way would have been, well, he's making 1.6. We got to keep him up. Well, now it's, okay, you're making 1.6. Show me why. And if you can't, then you're going to make 1.6 carrying your own bag down in the AHL.
Yeah, that's Benoit. That's, you know, Nate Gennon, who's looked pretty good for the Avalanche. That's Saric. That's the newer Avalanche defense that makes Hunwick expendable.
I get it. I mean, geez, you know, it's if you can't out battle him for a job, bye.
You're doing something.
Yeah. Yeah.
So. Well, we know about fast skating defensemen with Kyle Komiski as well. Fast is good, but you have to be able to play some D as well. Mm-hmm. October 12th, the Avalanche at the Capitals, and they win 5-1. Ryan Wilson returns the lineup after missing much of the preseason with a knee injury. Tyson Barry is your healthy scratch. It was made pretty public by Patrick Waugh that if Tyson Barry wasn't going to pick up his game, maybe a change would be made. And that's who was replaced when Ryan Wilson was healthy again. Matt Duchene channels his inner Peter Forsberg with his first goal late in the first period, made the game 2-0 Avalanche. It was the little, I'm going to go around the defenseman and then roof it. A beautiful shot by him. And congratulations to Nathan MacKinnon, who scored his first NHL goal on the power play during the second period. The Avs were up 3-0. They just dominated this game. Paul Stastny records his 400th NHL point, obviously all with the Avalanche, on Nathan MacKinnon's second period goal. Five players in Avalanche history have scored at least 400 points with the team: Sakic, Forsberg, Hajduk, Tanguay. That's a serious list, too. And on cue, Adrian Dater calls Paul Stastny out during the Red Wings game and says during the third period, this is where Paul Stastny should be stepping up, and he's not. I still haven't heard Dater call Paul Stastny out when the Avalanche are winning, which is kind of a strange thing. Mm-hmm. So it's just cue the Stastny hate, and it will come along. It's going to be an interesting.
It's all about the dollars.
It's going to be an interesting offseason for him.
Mm-hmm.
Whether he's going to take I think he's going to obviously have to take a pay cut to stay.
I think he'll take a pay cut and a time cut. I think he would take a pay cut for a few less years, like maybe a 2-year contract, and then try and get it back. But you know,
I think the Avalanche are better with him with the lineup. I've always said that, and I don't want to see him go anywhere. I'm not sure if he wants to go anywhere.
Avs are so deep down the middle right now that they could get rid of Stastny if they really needed to. The question is whether they really or not need to. We've talked a little bit about this. We talked about this on the Bash Brothers podcast a little bit, that there is a certain reset button since Patrick Waugh has gotten to the Avalanche, that the defense is looking a lot better without bringing in big stud defensemen. Everybody's worried about, oh no, the Avs didn't address their defensive needs. They got rid of defensemen. We talked about that before. But they're also starting to play a better system. People are buying in, and you've got a coach that actually is coaching them. Same thing possibly with Stastny. How much time did Stastny languish under Sacco? Now let's hit the reset button and see what under Waugh and under this new culture things are going to happen. It's been a while since anybody's felt good about Stastny, but if we can, you know, if we can take a look at his game now and separate it from the old game, will it look better? I'm willing to take a look at it.
I think it's looked better. Well, the investment's going to make you have to do that, obviously, but he's looked better, and he does so many things other than score.
Yeah.
He'd rather pass.
He's a playmaker.
He's made that obvious.
Mm-hmm.
He still doesn't have a goal, and he will. He'll score, but he's not your 30-40 goal scorer.
Nope.
But he will produce assists. He'll kill penalties. He'll set up power play goals. And I think he does a lot of stuff that people just don't realize, especially once they get distracted by, you know, all the hate and the lack of goals. So
and the amount of money he's making. He's still he's got 4 assists.
He's looking better. I look for things to celebrate with Paul Stastny. I'm not sure if that's meant to be because I want him to stick around or that I want him to earn his money or I'm just tired of people hating on him. But he can play.
He is +2 right now.
You see the plus minus stuff? It's
no one is minus.
It's a different look.
No one.
Well, they have 20? I have the stats. Hold, please. 23 goals for and 10 against. This is different territory. Like, I'm not quite sure what to do with all these stats here.
Well, that 6-1 sure helped.
That helps too. 12 points. Yeah. Varley already has 2 road wins this year. What's going on?
Yeah.
He didn't have one until one of the last games of the year when he came in and covered for Ada Callio on the road. I don't know. It's crazy. I don't know what to do. Alex Tanguay has 2 goals in this game as well. And I think he's proving that he can play the game, which is why he's still in the league. And it sure is good to have him back. I think on a lot of levels for this team, not only his experience, but his veteran leadership. And he can play. Mm-hmm. He really can. He's a good hockey player. Mentioned a couple different places. Retweeted by the Colorado Avalanche on Twitter. Because that's where you retweet stuff. Stop laughing. It's not funny.
I know.
First team in NHL history to begin the season with 5 straight wins while allowing no more than 1 goal in each game. Mm-hmm. That's good stuff.
That is.
I like that. It is acceptable to me. The Puck Daddy then has their 5 most surprising teams of the season's first 2 weeks. Obviously, the Avalanche are on that list. Mm-hmm. I don't think anybody expected them to start 5-0 or 6-0. They're playing scared. What else you got?
Well, this is from the Puck Daddy. Here's a quote from it. My theory, the entire Avalanche roster had a front row seat for Patrick Waugh's manhandling of the partition separating him from Bruce Boudreau in the season opener. And they realized right then and there that the partition could just as easily be the back, neck, or face of any one of them. If I'm not on the ball, they realized, Patrick Waugh might tear my spine out. That's how you motivate a team.
Yes. Okay. By tearing spines out.
Yeah, exactly. That's exactly how you do it.
I've heard Patrick Waugh say that numerous times.
Oh, yeah.
If he doesn't shape up, I'm going to tear his spine out.
I'm going to tear his spine out.
Yes, and throw it on the ground.
Here's the thing. Everybody, the hockey world that basically looks at the stats, the highlights, and doesn't actually watch the game, doesn't actually watch the systems, doesn't actually read what the players are saying, could very easily make this decision. They're all running scared because of Patrick Waugh. If that were the case, then Vancouver would be doing wonderful. They'd be 8-0 right now under John Tortorella.
Tortorella would still be in New York, probably.
Yeah, they're 5-3, which isn't bad. But, you know, they aren't running scared from the coach. That's not how the NHL works anymore. Maybe it was when you could cut players pretty easily. Maybe it was when there weren't guaranteed contracts. Maybe there was when there wasn't a salary cap and you could just trade somebody with no problem. But that's not how it works in the NHL. So you have guys that are quote-unquote running scared, or do you have guys that are actually getting coaching that they finally have a guy working on the defense in Adam Foote, who people respect? They have a coach that they actually respect. They have a goaltending coach. Again, this is a new look. I heard reports from from training camp that there was more coaching going on at training camp than the entire season last season. Patrick Waugh was sending people to the net. You take your shot, you get to the net and stop and be ready for something to happen. Somebody didn't do it. He stopped. He blew the whistle, said, nope, do it again. Get to the net and stop. You know, he was actually making them do things. Even Varlamov has said that he's gone through more work in practice than he has before. This is not being scared. This is buying into a system. This is respecting the guy who's behind the, you know, who has your back. And you don't get afraid of the guy who's pushing the barricades over towards the other team. You know he's behind you. He's not going to just shove you over the cliff. He's got your back, and that I think is a lot more important. Sacco, I think Sacco probably would have sold anybody straight up the river to make sure that he had another season, you know?
Yeah.
But now you've got a guy in there who's been there, who's done that, and is going to help you.
Something's obviously different, and you can see it. It's blaring.
Yeah.
Mike Chambers' article on the Avalanche's defensive system, Eric Johnson, guys are playing with more confidence because they're allowed to play their game within the systems. We just believe in what he's telling us to do. Slam on Sacco, maybe. Showing true belief in Patrick Roy. Yeah.
Yeah.
I'd say so. And that's exciting stuff.
Yeah, it was there are a few different there's a few ways to do defensive zone coverage. Every team has a different system. But if guys don't buy into it, like what we did last year, you're not going to have success, Shiger said. Well, they're buying into it. And for good reason. And there was a good reason that they didn't buy into it before. So is it that Patrick Roy is going to shove a partition and now the team's going to win?
Maybe. Probably not.
Barely. Yeah. I think it might be a little factor, but
it doesn't hurt.
Again, people are talking about Roy and not the team, and it's the team that's putting in the goals.
Yeah, and I think that'll shift if the Avalanche can keep this up, which we're all hoping, obviously.
Yep.
October 15th, the Avalanche against the Stars at Pepsi Center. They win 3-2. The Avalanche take a 2-1 lead into the second period with goals by Matt Duchene. And Jan Hayda with 7 seconds left.
Jan Hayda, they kind of shifted that one from Hayda to, I think, McGinn.
It was McGinn.
And then back to Hayda for the tip, blah, blah, blah. It was, yeah.
That was fun. That's always fun.
Yeah.
But, man, the defense is scoring. Saric has a goal. EJ has a goal. Hayda has a goal. It's very different.
The first goal was by Matt Duchene. We're going to talk about the second one in a moment. But the first goal from Matt Duchene was just a Sergei Gonchar. Horrible, horrible pass. It just...
I'll take that.
Yeah, it just trickled off of his stick.
He scuffed it. He did something to it, yeah.
And Matt Duchene reaches around, grabs it with a stick, and fires in. In the post game, he was talking about how his new stick is a little whippier than the old one. So he didn't, you know, you watch these guys. What amazes me about these guys is when you get a good wrist shot, especially if you look at stills of Joe Sakic's wrist shot, the first thing that they do is they load up that stick by pushing it into the ice. A slap shot is the same way.
Same way.
You hit the ice first, then scoop in the puck. And I think golf clubs are pretty much like that. When you break the wrist, it whips the club.
The thing about the golf ball is you hit the ball first, and then the divot actually is before.
Oh, okay.
The divot actually comes
but
after.
But the whip of the club comes from when you stop your wrist. Essentially, you break the wrist, and that makes the whip. With hockey sticks, when you push into the ice, that loads up the stick with more power. And then, of course, sticks are manufactured differently and where that kick point is. Duchene, he basically loaded up that stick barely even with, you know, and it's amazing to me how these guys can do this.
It was gone.
They barely have any wind up or any real shoulder into the thing. Push down into the ice, load up that stick, and then just release.
That's what made Sakic so good. Exactly. That's what made Sakic so good without the technology that's going into the sticks. I mean, Sakic had some. He doesn't even need technology.
But now, like if with Duchene even mentioning that he has this whippier stick, that thing's going to launch off of his...
Obviously.
Yeah. And it might, you know, it takes a little getting used to when you have a new stick, when you change anything like that.
Yeah.
If you go to where, you know, anywhere they sell hockey sticks, and you'll see on the blade, or I mean on the shaft of it, they'll have like whatever the pattern is, the player's name, that's like the style of the curve. And then they have a number after that. It's usually like 75, 85, or 100.
Yours is 50, right?
Mine, I wish it was, because I actually play with a slightly shorter stick,
right?
Because I like to be able to handle the puck a little better in my feet. But the shorter you make it, the higher that number would go. That number is basically how many pounds it takes to get a certain amount of flex out of it. That's your flex number. So if a 75 is more flexible than 100. So if he was playing with, like, let's say an 85, which is kind of in the middle range, sometimes the manufacturers will say, oh yeah, it's an 85, but it's more like an 81. These guys, after days and days, years and years of using the same sticks and stuff, they'll feel the difference.
Oh,
if Matt Duchene that says that thing is whippier, you better believe that thing is whippier.
And after the game he played, we're going with whatever Matt Duchene said.
Yeah.
Because during the second period, Matt Duchene comes off the bench on a delayed penalty against the Stars, takes the puck and just says, everybody get out of my way. Records his 200th career point already in his fifth NHL, early in his fifth NHL season, and gave the Avalanche a 3-2 lead at the time. Just a beautiful goal, kind of like a Peter Forsberg goal, which is, I'll take those all night long.
Not like at all a Matt Duchene goal of old.
Nope.
Matt Duchene gets the puck, he passes it back, it gets back to him as he's cutting in towards the goaltender, and there's two defensemen right in the middle. Old school Matt Duchene would go right through those guys, or he'd try to. Instead, he cuts to the left, makes a little bit of room, maybe even picks up a little bit of screen on the goaltender, and whippy stick, puts it past the goaltender. Old school.
Snipe.
Total snipe.
Oh.
Top shelf.
Where
mama hides the bottle of liquor that makes her feel better after the end of the day.
Yes. Right next to it.
Man.
And the cookies.
Sad trombone.
It's the liquor cookie shelf.
Old school Matt Duchene would have tried to go through two defenders. Hey, newsflash, going through one defender is a lot easier than going through two. but it was a moment. When I saw it, I just thought, oh my God, Matt Duchene is finally starting to get out of his old habits. And maybe it's that he doesn't feel like he has to do as much himself.
Could be.
Maybe it's some coaching.
Maybe.
Maybe it's just that he's maturing as a player.
Possibly.
What did you say? Fifth season, right?
This is I can't believe it's been five seasons already. But yeah, it's the beginning of his fifth season right now.
And that's, you know, that's a good time to start pulling other tricks out of his bag. And
I mean, he
actually had one.
He looks great. And he's gluten free still.
Is he?
As far as I know.
Is he gluten free?
Well, yeah, that's all they talked about last year. He's got a new diet. Well, now we don't have to talk about his diet. We can talk about the snipes that mm-hmm. he just throws at people.
Yep.
Sniper sauce.
No. The first goal against the Avs in that game was kind of unfortunate. Mm-hmm. Defense playing a little too wide.
And Peverly can skate.
Oh, yeah.
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 And he showed that off.
Yeah.
The Avalanche were down. I believe that was the first time they had been. Yep. It was weird to.
Well, it was the first time they gave up the first goal.
Yeah.
And before that, I think the stat was they'd only been trailing
seven
by
minutes
3 minutes or something.
Yeah, it was some crazy number that we're not used to seeing. The Red Wings game, the next game, changed that just a little bit.
Great breakdown in that game, by the way, by Mark Rycroft afterwards. He was showing how, I can't remember who it was, it might have been Peverly, peeled off to go to the bench on the
delayed
penalty.
Yeah, I remember seeing that, yeah.
And he goes to the bench, and the person who comes on is just like, oh my God, just starts scrambling.
And Matt
Duchene
is gone.
He's
gone. It was fantastic. Yeah. Varley with 39 saves says he's never worked harder in practice during, you know, hopefully this lasts. And sometimes I know the coaches throughout the season want to save some energy, but you also have to work the guys pretty hard to be able to keep them in shape and make the games that much more simple. And hopefully that's going to be the case. You don't want to wear them down. But Patrick Waugh knows what it takes to be worn down mm-hmm. or not as a goaltender. So you can see his influence on that already as well.
And the big question was, when Patrick Waugh with the goaltenders, how is he going to react? How is he going to treat the goaltenders? Are the goaltenders going to feel the pressure of having this guy behind them? The thing is, instead, Patrick Waugh is supporting them. Why would? And at first, sure, the easy answer is, well, God, the pressure's got to be horrible, blah, blah, blah. But why, if you're that coach, would you want to put that kind of pressure on them? Instead, help them. And that's what Patrick Waugh's job is. And so he's doing that rather than just saying, oh, you have to be better. No, here's how you can be better. And that is making a big difference on these guys. And, you know, again, Francois Allaire, goaltending coach. I believe he was the goaltending coach when they won the cup also mm-hmm. and went to Toronto with Brian Burke.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
So, I mean, proven track record.
Oh, very much so.
Working well so far.
Working at winning.
So, yeah, we've been waiting for that. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, Varley, 39 saves, looks fantastic once again. It's still a lot of saves, and you're starting to see just a teeny bit of the team depending a little bit too much on Varley. And I know this has been mentioned to them by the coaching staff as well. Yep. And there's going to be nights where you're just going to have to, because you don't have it, you're going to have to watch Varley do his thing. 39 saves every game, 37 for Jiggy. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of shots, and that's not going to last. And I know Waugh's bringing that up and saying this needs to change.
He has, but also Varley, I think it was Varley himself brought up that a lot of these shots are being kept to the outside.
Yeah.
They're not, he's seeing them all the way.
Yeah.
They're, you know, 39 saves seems like a ton, but if they're all from the outside, that's
good.
You got a lot better chance. You got that time to get it together.
Great Puck Daddy article running on the 17th. The basic premise behind it, Varley isn't supposed to look this confident, mm-hmm. this impenetrable, and this good so far.
Yeah.
I will post a link to that. Positive attention, mm-hmm. which is very, very different.
People
for the
are
Avalanche.
Very mad at him when he was in Washington and he lost the job to Neuve. But part of the reason he lost the job to Neuve was he got injured. Neuve right. stepped up. Boom! You lose your starting job
for a while. Yep.
So, and considering last season, again, what we were talking about with positioning versus trying to do too much. If you're trying to do too much and you're trying to rely on your athleticism to make up for the defensive breakdowns in front of you, yeah, they're going to go in. Yeah, you're going to look bad. But when you have more time to get in position in the right position, you're doing it's a lot easier.
And hopefully they can keep that going. Mm-hmm. October 17th, the Avalanche lose their first game of the year against our buddies, the Detroit Red Wings.
That's it. Fire everybody. I'm done.
The season's over. They lost to the Red Wings. Avs down 2-0 in the first. They come back in the second period. Power play goals by Eric Johnson. Coast to coast. Awesome. I mean, it's about time for him. I'm sure that felt great. Mm-hmm. Hopefully that gets him going. Gabriel Landeskog scores his first of the season as well. And they go into the third tied up. Pavel Datsyuk and Johan Franzen both score again in the third. They had the two goals in the first period.
Pavel Datsyuk's just a good hockey player.
He's pretty decent.
I do not like the man because he plays for the Red Wings, but other than that, he's a really good hockey player.
Zetterberg's the same way. And Johan Franzen against the Avalanche, yeah, he's pretty good. 24 goals in his 32 career games against the Avalanche.
Man.
What are you going to do?
Yeah. Check him.
Smash his head against the boards?
Well, Weber him? No.
No. All right, let's talk about the hit.
All right,
the hit. Cody McLeod, big hit on Nicholas Cronwall. A lot going on with this one. In general, we've got Cody McLeod will be out the next two games at least, and he has a hearing on Monday with the league to see if it's going to be more. I assume it's going to be probably a couple more, if not more. I don't know, kind of an irresponsible hit by Cody McLeod. Cronwall's back is to him the whole time.
Yeah.
Go for it.
Well, they're coming in left side. They're coming down the wing. Cronwall goes into the corner first for the puck. Kind of overskates the puck a little bit. Mm-hmm. There's a couple of things to keep in mind here. Number one, it's right by where either the Zamboni doors are or the other side's doors. And the
big
cross
doors,
corners,
big doors. Yeah.
Which is where the worst ice is out there. That's where a puck going along the boards is going to get hung up. It's going to bounce on you, things like that. That's where there's going to be ice issues. So Cronwall overskates the puck a little bit or just doesn't quite get as much stick on it as he wanted. McLeod's coming in hot, but which seems like a really nice excuse. Here's the thing. Cody McLeod has been in this scenario thousands of times, from juniors to his NHL career, anytime the minors. This is not an unusual play. You're back-checking, basically, along the boards. You're going after the guy. You're going to try and start a forecheck going. You're on his tail. You know what can happen. He might continue around. He might stop and reverse. There's a few things that could happen. So this is not unusual territory for McLeod. He should instinctually know that things can happen here. He sees the number. All he sees are Cronwall's numbers
the whole time.
Yeah, and Cronwall, unfortunately, when he goes back to play, gets his head right about level with the shelf on the boards there, right on the dasher. And that's a bad place for your head to be. So McLeod makes the hit. And this is how I see it. McLeod is responsible for the hit. They're both responsible for the injury. But McLeod should know better. He could have, he had another guy behind him. He had a Red Wing behind him, which means that there might be a reverse of the puck to try and get it past him and back. He knows that Cronwall might stop there. I don't see any real excuse for finishing that check. I don't see any good reason that should happen. He also had backup coming behind him in John Mitchell. So he didn't have to destroy a guy to take him off the puck. There would have been support there.
Like McLeod wasn't looking to win the puck either. I mean, this wasn't a chase for the puck. McLeod was a good 3-4 yards behind it.
Yeah.
Maybe a little bit less. So it wasn't like he was just looking to steal the puck and score it.
And Cronwall,
he's not
made,
playing defense.
Cronwall made a hockey play. I mean, that was a real hockey play there that Cronwall was trying to make. Get the puck, get it around, get it back, do something with the puck. And if the puck bounced on him and that made him stop, well, that's still a hockey play. You know,
it did. It looked like he was going to continue along the boards and he hesitated for just a second.
Hit the brakes.
And I think that's why he took some responsibility for the outcome of it as well.
Right.
He said, that's my fault. That's what hockey players do. You don't put yourself in that situation. because Cronwall's been in that, especially as a defenseman, he's been in that situation way more than McLeod has.
I think there's a lot less of that now, of taking your own, of a player saying, well, that was partially my fault, because A, you can get a guy suspended a lot easier if you don't take responsibility, obviously. Right. But B, I think that there's more outcry these days. There's more of a push to keep away from the headshots and things like that. So people are more liable to point the finger and go, that guy did that.
Yeah.
That Cronwall actually said that was a little bit surprising to me, not because of his character, but because of that just seems like the NHL way these days.
Right.
That was entirely that guy's fault. Throw the book at that guy. Let's get him out of this game, blah, blah, blah.
It's not, I don't know. You can't doubt the fact it was a dirty hit.
Mm-hmm.
I think Cody McLeod would say he regrets what he did there too, and he'd probably do it differently if he had a chance.
Mm-hmm.
You want to go in hard. You want to be able to finish checks, but you also want to do it in a smart way where you can stick around the rest of the game.
Yeah.
This was a couple minutes in, and he's out the rest of that game, including the next couple, and I don't think any NHL player wants to put their team in that situation where you're playing one forward down for that game and an alternate captain short for the next handful.
Yeah.
And we'll find out a little bit more on Monday, I guess, about what's going on, but I do know that he'll be out tonight as we record this against the Sabres, and Monday night against the Pens. Yes.
Yes.
Okay. On top of this, other comments. Mike Haynes from Altitude Television, before he kind of realized, I guess, what was going on in the heat of the moment, Mike Haynes gets in this Red Wings zone. His voice is very different during Red Wings games than it is during any other game. I understand that, but he says that was Cronwall got a taste of his own medicine. I don't know if anybody's going to back him up on that. Peter McNabb was quiet for a little bit, realizing kind of what was going on. I don't know whether Mike Haynes just kind of took his eye off or didn't realize. I think he'd even tell you it was not the best choice of words at that particular moment. He's not known for that, so it was something more to talk about, but it just wasn't, it wasn't, like I said, it wasn't the best choice of words, and I think he'd tell you that, but it's something that got some attention.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
He should have, he didn't do it, like, he didn't say it, you know, a minute after.
Yeah, when it was pretty much right after.
It was right after, but obviously something was not good with Cronwall. Yeah. Cronwall is not a guy who's going to take a hit and then stay down.
No,
he will get up and make you try and pay for that hit. He was down.
He was hurt, and his eyes were rolling around. And
yeah.
Peter McNabb handled it pretty well, where he was a little quieter. He definitely smoothed things out, and I'm sure this was part of their conversation, and I'm curious just to see. I don't think Mike Haynes necessarily needs to apologize, but I think just him addressing it and saying, here's what I meant by when I said that. I wouldn't be surprised if he did that tonight.
Mm-hmm.
And if he has a chance to say something about it, I don't think there's anybody that ever roots for anybody to get hurt. And then there was also those comments, which you knew were going to be there. I wish that had been Bertuzzi.
Mm.
That doesn't fix anything either.
No.
You don't ever want to see a guy get hurt, whether it's on your team or somebody else's team. Let's flip everything around. And let's say that's Jan Hayda laying on the ice. We have a little different scenario with us and everything. So kind of a complicated situation.
Yeah. I mean, and also if you look at Mike Haynes' Twitter feed, which he hasn't tweeted since April.
No, he hasn't. It's been a couple of years.
Good for him, though, because there's a lot of vitriol towards him. I swear this is like a Twitter invention. stay classy, you boop hat. I wish that you would get hurt, too, and things like that.
Tweet rage.
People do tweet rage and then follow it up with stay classy. Like with the least classy tweets ever. Good job, people.
I like to call that keyboard courage.
It's
just one of those things where it kind of brings out the worst in everybody. Mm-hmm. I don't ever want to turn Twitter into a place where you can't share your opinions, but at least be, for lack of a better term, classy about it. And think about a guy and his family. And let's just go off that instead of it was the Red Wings, an Avalanche guy hit him really hard and he's down. Let's celebrate. I don't think there's anything to celebrate with a hit like that.
You know, the thing is, and also we have the benefit of hindsight. Fans at a game, I've heard it before, oh, those classless fans for cheering this guy getting injured. In the moment, how do you know he's injured?
Yeah.
In the moment, how do you know that this happened? Sometimes it's obvious, and you know what? Sometimes it's not. And sometimes it's just a big check, and people are like, wow, look at that big check. Oh.
Uh-oh.
You know? Yeah. People are still, are cheering during fights and they're getting punched in the face. That's painful.
That's weird.
You can't expect a guy. We have this crazy expectations of what these guys are supposed to do. We have this moral code that we expect these people to adhere to and look at it in hindsight and say, why didn't they do that? Well, it's live broadcast. We've heard players. We've heard players swear when they get the cup. We've seen politicians do things. You know, I'm a firm believer after years of working in audio. Don't say anything around a mic that you wouldn't back up or that you don't believe.
Yep.
And you know what? If Mike Haynes came out and said, "Look, it's the Red Wings. We've always had this rivalry, and yeah, it was probably the optics of it is bad, and it looks bad in the heat of the moment. And I kind of wish I hadn't said it, considering what the outcome was.
Right.
If Cromwell had gotten right back up, that comment would have been
no big deal. Yep.
You know.
And I'm always one to err on the side of caution, and I just try and maybe that's the teacher in me because I have to be that way. Mm-hmm. But I'm never looking for it. I don't get joy out of watching people get hurt.
No.
And if there's any doubt at all, I don't care if it's the Avalanche or anybody else in any pro sport or any time.
Yeah.
I don't cheer for people getting hurt. And that's why I try not to get too up and down on.
And we've had way too many people carried off on stretchers this season already. The George Karras thing. There was
three this week.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, one of them, of course, was last night with the dude just falling face first into the boards.
Did you see his tweet this morning?
Yeah. He basically
the boards
tweeted,
are not edible?
Yeah. In case you were wondering, the boards are not edible.
That's outstanding.
That was the Winnipeg Jets player. Yes. God, I can't remember.
The one guy with the skates.
That guy who skates and does things. I can't.
Come on, find it
right now. I saw it in the Twitter feed, too.
We'll find it in the tweet feeds.
Jacob Trouba.
Yes. Yeah. So glad he's okay.
And, thanks for the support. If you were wondering, the boards are not edible.
That's great.
I'll be back soon.
You know, besides like a Steve Moore and broken bones, mm-hmm. the stretcher is way more, thankfully, way more of a precaution than anything mm-hmm. else. And you never get used to it. You never like to see guys go out that way. Mm-hmm. But for the most part, they're okay, which is always good.
Yeah.
So I think it's a combination of a lot of things. Well, what kind of shape they're in.
Hey, you know, the thing is, you never know. Like, yeah. I had a game a week ago, 2 weeks ago. 1-0 win. Woohoo! Great. It was a pretty hard game. But one of my teammates skating into the corner slips, falls feet first into the boards. We had to help him off. We had to basically carry him off, essentially. He couldn't put any weight on his leg. After the game, you know, he had to lean on us getting out to his car. Turns out he broke his fibula.
Oh.
You don't know. You just don't know. So if you're going to bring out, you know, the stretcher looks really bad, but there's a point where you're just like, you know what? Just stay down.
Yeah.
We'll help you get off.
That's anti-hockey.
Yeah.
You know, if those guys stay.
Oh, I got to get back up. I got to be in there. You know what? Why don't you get up in a couple months when you can play again? Let's just keep it cool. But it's bad. It is bad optics for the league. It looks bad when you're stretchering guys off.
Yeah.
And, you know, it happens. Seems like it happens every game in the NFL these days. Yeah. It's just, I mean, the hitting is getting harder. But. At least you're right. Have a little bit of caution. It's not that it's not classy. It's not that the comment was so wrong. It's just it's bad in the context. But yeah. You can't go back and fix context.
Right. It'll be interesting to see if he addresses it. And I think he's not known for that. So it was kind of an outlier, which I guess is a good thing as well. If he did that all the time, I don't think I want to get used to a tone like that.
Yeah.
So we'll see. But
he's no Jack Edwards. We'll put it that way.
Jack Edwards, what a beaut!
Oh man!
So the Avalanche are 6-1. They're first in the division. What's going on here?
It's kind of strange. They're second in the conference. They're tied with everybody's darling, the Pittsburgh Penguins. They've got a game in hand against the Red Wings, and are tied in points. There's a lot of haves and have-nots right now in the league. I mean, take a look at Edmonton, 1-6-1. Look at Buffalo, finally won a game, and they had to do it in the shootout, 1-7-1. Flyers are 1-7-0. New Jersey hasn't won a game. I can't believe that nobody's really talking about that as much. They haven't won a game. 0-4-3.
Wow.
It's ridiculous. You know, and so far right now there's been a lot of cross conference play. The Eastern Conference are handing out points like it's Halloween and it's candy. It's ridiculous how much losing is going on over there.
Trick or treat. As far as statistics go, 7 games in, PA Parento 7 points, same as Matt Duchene, and Nathan MacKinnon 7 points already into his career. Tanguay already with 5, McGinn with 5. I mean, I don't know. Matt Duchene already has 5 goals in 7 games. What's happening Everything's happening. I don't know what to do. It's still early. I'm excited.
McKinnon is really benefiting from playing with McKinnon too. Some of those passes are amazing.
The chemistry they've shown so far really shows that. It's a newfound confidence, and I'm cautiously optimistic, and I just hope they keep it going. It's still very early. Yeah.
Now, Steve Downey, 4 points so far, one goal, 3 assists. For him, that's pretty good.
It is good.
Here's what I want to see from Steve Downey. A little more heads-up play. A little more looking before making that pass. He's making too many blind passes, especially in that Dallas game. I was really disappointed in some of the blind passes that he was making. Yeah. Get your head up. You're playing with guys who can handle your pass. So get in their triangle. Just look around for a moment before doing something. He's not the fastest guy in the world. I don't think he's quite healthy.
He still has a little hitch.
Yeah.
Which is fine around the net if he's strong enough to hold his ground.
Mm-hmm.
But he's having a hard time keeping up, and that's okay. It's not blaring.
MCL tear?
It was full blown. Whatever. It was his knee. It was ACL.
It was a full on something going.
A man wrestle. But I mean, it's exciting to see that even not at 100%, his line mates make things a little simpler.
Yeah.
But
look up. Just take the moment.
I totally
agree.
Take
the moment. If it's that patience, and sometimes you don't have time for it, that's the NHL game. The NHL game is sometimes just get it away from the other guy, battle it out, and try and make something out of nothing. But when you have a moment, when you have time to look up, find that blue jersey, find that maroon jersey, whatever, that burgundy jersey, maroon, red, green.
Whatever they're wearing that night.
Paisley. And and get the puck towards that, rather than just throw it away fast.
The cool part about the entire situation, including stuff like that, the Avalanche are 6-1,
mm-hmm.
and they still have a lot of work to do. And that's pretty exciting.
Instead of
what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So it is early. I just hope they keep it going. I mean, it's I don't know if it's time to get super excited. I don't know. Mm-hmm. It's not time to talk anything right now.
No.
But they're taking it game by game, like hockey players tend to do. And it's been a fun ride so far.
Yeah.
So
lots of balloons.
Balloon. Mm-hmm. We've got shout outs.
Oh,
I've got a couple. Jacob Tashler came in from Detroit just to watch the second game of the season.
Mm.
Against whoever that was. I forgot already.
Yeah, we already talked about
the Predators. Yeah. Came up and saw me, said hi. So, Jacob, thanks. Good to see you, man. Randy Kroger and also Hannah, thanks for coming up. Good to see you guys as well. And everybody that's playing along with everybody else on Avs Twitter Psychic.
That's a fun game.
It is kind of fun.
It was just kind of your thing last season, but this season it's turned into like a lot of people's
thing. It's been fun. And I don't get to the tweets right away, but people get the retweets, and it's... Like I said on the show that we were doing before this.
We can't afford to give you shirts, people. Come on.
It's kind of like the Bucci Overtime Challenge, but then it's kind of not like the Bucci Overtime Challenge. Then it's kind of like the Bucci Overtime Challenge.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, play along with us. Hashtag Avs Twitter Psychic. And just tell us who's going to score the first goal of the game for the Avalanche. And you could be a wiener, too. Mm-hmm. Of a retweet and all the fame and glory that comes with a retweet
that
from
comes with
Avs podcast.
Thousands of followers that follow you.
It's not even thousands, but it is pretty exciting. It's 1,100. It's 1,100.
Nice.
So that's kind of fun. So thank you to all you followers.
Yeah.
Shout out to you guys. Shout outs from you, James Tablet Grayling.
Will Shippey and his wife Summer, who came out from California and brought some in-laws, some family with them. Good to see you guys. I'm actually going to see them in November also out in L.A. Pop down there. So
excellent.
It'll be a good time. I had no idea Summer is a goalie.
Kick save and a beaut.
Other than that, my teammate from the summer, Logan, was at the first game of the season. It was good to see him. And the guy I mentioned who broke his fibula, Alan, get better soon there.
Yes,
Alan.
Heal quickly.
Yeah, because we're going to need you.
Also, a shout out to my coworker, Nancy Meza. I don't think she's going to listen to this, but she knows I have a podcast. Mm-hmm. She knows I'm excited about it, and that's good enough.
Nice.
But she got the cool stickers that I put on my my charger here, my Avalanche stickers. So
I got free stuff. I'm happy now.
I get excited about little things.
Yeah, you do.
So shout out to her. I don't know if she'll hear this, but if she does hear it, maybe she'll say something.
Okay.
I think that's it.
Think that's it?
That's all the things, all the Avalanche things.
Oh, man, I'm so not prepared for the end.
Do you want me to stretch this out?
No, I got it. Here it is.
Oh, you're good?
Yeah, let's do it.
Here's James with the spiel.
You have been, you will be, you will continue to find the Avs Hockey Podcast at www.avshockeypodcast.com. There's old episodes there. There's Jay posting about jerseys. There's a link to the Facebook page, which is facebook.com/avshockeypodcast. There's a link to curse word gear. And eventually I'm going to get off my duff and make some ear hole gear and maybe some other stuff like that.
Ear hole gear. That sounds good.
You're an ear hole gear.
Stick it in your ear hole.
You gear hole. There's also a link so you can subscribe in iTunes, which is the easiest way to get it. But, you know, I think I'm going to try and work on getting us in a few other places. Maybe do the, Stitcher thing or the, try and get on that Zune marketplace, even though the Zune doesn't even exist anymore. Did you know that they discontinued the Zune? Angelique is going to be very upset. She loves her Zune.
That sounds lucrative.
Yeah, I know.
Hi, Jory.
You can find Jay on Twitter at Avs Podcast. He dropped the HKY. It's just Avs Podcast. So hit him up there. Hit me up on Twitter at Tapeleg, TAPELEG. I'm on, you can also hit Jay up at Avs Hockey Podcast at gmail.com. That's kind of our official email address. What else have we got? You can call the show at 845-704-RINK, 845-704-7465. I need to touch the iPod.
Wow. That's an iPad.
Sorry. That's an iPad.
Know your Apple products.
Damn it.
You did well. You didn't hurt yourself and went through a lot of stuff to get there.
It's kind
of
weird.
Way to go.
What else? There's something else, isn't there? You can find my blog at jerseyandhockeylove.com, which I haven't really posted lately because I've just been saving up some stuff that I want to talk about with Jay. And boy, I sure did a lot of talking on this one.
That's okay.
Man, did I keep talking.
There's plenty to talk about. That's what I'm happy about.
Yeah, there is a lot to talk about.
Yes.
So that's about it.
That's it.
AvsHockeyPodcast.com. And don't forget to play Avs Twitter Psychic. Entries close off once the puck drops.
Don't try and pull any shenanigans.
No. Don't try it like that fake AHP tweets.
Yeah, who's the jokers behind that stuff?
You know, you're a joker. Did you know that?
Mm-hmm. You might been told that many times. So 7 games in, things looking good so far. Mm-hmm. Hopefully the Avs keep it going. James, always appreciative of your time and your input.
Hey, thank you.
And thanks for a kick butt podcast.
And don't forget, we did the Bash Brothers podcast. You can hear pretty much everything that we talked about today on this podcast, plus probably a little bit more. Chatting with somebody else who thinks that we're not such awful people. on Twitter,
yet,
they're
at least
at Bash Brothers NHL. Thanks for Jeff Ponder.
Thanks again, Jeff.
For thinking about us.
Everybody else, keep enjoying the season because it's easy to do. Until the next time, we'll be back in your ear holes in a couple weeks. Until then, take care. Let's go Avs. We'll see you next time on the Avs Hockey Podcast. Later. Your services are no longer needed.
That's right.
Bye-bye now.
That's right. Bye-bye. Bye. Goodbye. Bye. Goodbye.
Peace.
Bye. Need to leave now. Get off my... Okay, I'll close the window. I will close... Don't... Click. There we go. Gone.